Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's the Mean Green Nation podcast, and this is a kind of a special episode. We already did the signing day podcast, and I think I mentioned on there. I did mention on there that I had wanted to get Billy Sierra from who moderates the recruiting forum at gomeangreen.com, and somebody whose recruiting opinion I respect. And has been following the class, the ins and outs thereof, and who's a pretty decent evaluator of talent. And so I wanted to get him on here, and we can talk a little bit more in depth about the positions. I know not everybody loves position-by-position breakdowns, and so it's good to separate them. If you, like, find the show, you're like, wow, this is going to be really boring. If we go position-by-position, that's why there's the other show. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get right to it. Billy, what did you think of the signing day class? Your immediate reaction. Was it disappointment? Was it excitement? What was it?
My immediate reaction is very split. I talked about it a little bit on the board, on the Gomeang Green board, but right. The way I look at this class is I look at it from two different angles. One is I look at it just strictly looking at the players that we got and just looking at, you know, the type of guys that we're bringing in. And then also separately looking at it from a – from the coach's standpoint, how good a job I think they did. And it's actually pretty different. There's actually a pretty stark contrast when you look at those two. I think the good news is, I think player-wise, I think we got in some pretty talented guys. You look at Jalen Darden, especially some of the guys late. Darden, Siggers, the athletes from Houston and Duncanville, respectively. Right. The receiver, Greg White, out of Georgia. Some of these guys we got late. We were able to kind of cherry pick. And that's a good thing, where I don't care how good a job recruiting we do. I don't care how good a job we do, you know, filling up the class quickly. But we always need to leave a few spots at the end for those guys who are just kind of hanging out there, who maybe decommitted and they're – you know, their offers dried up, or, you know, whatever the case may be, guys who are left there at the end just for a taking. And we've benefited over the years from that. And as long as we're in Conference USA, we're going to need to have spots open for those type of guys. Last year, Eric Jenkins.
Right.
Way back when, that was Zach Orr at one point. So these type of players have been critical for us in the past, and they're going to be, like I said, as long as we're on this level, we need to take advantage of those situations. So, again, we got some decent players in. Feeling okay about that. But, again, the part where it is a little concerning is with the coaches, and just a straight head-to-head recruiting standpoint. That's where, just looking at this class as a whole, looking at the entire recruiting cycle, that's really where they fell short. And whether it was losing Trayvon Bradley at the end of Houston, losing guys early who we wanted to UTSA, you know, whatever the case was, when we wanted a guy and someone else did, another FBS school, another school on our level, we really struggled to get that guy. We really struggled to have, you know, when that guy came down to us and somebody else, just way too many times this class, he chose somebody else. And, you know, that's something that, you know, while it's great to pick up guys late who, you know, all their other offers have fallen through, while they're still good players, at the same time, I just think it's too competitive, college football is, to just rely on shortcuts, so to speak. So at the end of the day, we're going to have to win those battles more. And that's, you know, that's the biggest disappointment from this class. But again, you know, you've got some good players to hang our hats on. So I think our coaches are going to do what they can with that. But going forward, I think that's, you know, the recruiting battle has to pick up.
Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, and I talked about it in the last podcast, the Sunday podcast. The immediate reaction was this met needs, but it didn't really win any headlines. That, I mean, and I don't know how important that is. I think if anything, we're getting like negative headlines. I mean, already was like SB Nation wrote up there. They're kind of like, well, when's a good, our transition class is good. And basically, if you get anybody in a transition class, you're lucky, and it's that first year that you really improve, and pretty much everybody improved except North Texas and like four other schools, and so that's concerning. You know, like, I think maybe already Seth Luttrell's getting a reputation as not a great recruiter, Or is it? Do you think it's that, or do you think it's more that same old? North Texas is hard to recruit to, because I don't know. I don't really buy that, but I mean, I'm kind of starting to believe that.
Yeah, I just don't buy that either. Just because I've seen, nationally, the guys who can recruit, they recruit at least better. At least better than their school, that school is used to. Recruiting in North Texas may be hard, but it's not hard to recruit better than other people have here in the past. So, while there is, it's never going to be easier to recruit here than, the big schools, Texas A&M. These, we're never going to be on that level, at least not in the foreseeable future. But we can at least recruit better than, the latter McCartney years or the later Todd Dodge years when, he was able to somehow string together some decent classes, but he was recruiting to 1-11, 2-10 teams at Fouts Field. We can easily raise our bar from that level. So yeah, while it is, harder to recruit to North Texas, at the same time, we're not asking the guy to, be pulling, 4 stars. We're just asking them to raise our standards to get to swing players who would, be going elsewhere to other G5 programs to get them to come here. So, that's very doable. And not only is it doable, it's been done. It's been done by McCartney. It's been done by Dodge. It's been done by Dickey. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to do it at least at a higher level than it has been done before, given the conference, given the stadium and insert any other recruiting advantage we haven't been able to fully implement into our recruiting tactics, whatever it is, we can do better. And that's the biggest thing to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, just a couple of guys off the top of my head, I think we went head to head for the receiver. Was it Tariq Wooden, I think his name. And then Frank Wooden, Harris, yeah, we lost them both to UTSA, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so I think that's what I'm saying. I'm looking at those guys, and it's fine to lose one. You're going to lose battles. You're going to lose a Trayvon Bradley, probably to Houston. Honestly, if I'm being honest,
right,
I probably would choose Houston if I had the choice there. Hey, here's a school that, beat Oklahoma, is on TV, it's in a great city, it's looking up, and then, you look, I'm essentially in a rebuilding job, even though I'm going to be the star of the show. I totally see that decision. But UTSA, that one's not so easy. And I think that it comes down to, like you said, just losing a head-to-head recruiting battle with another guy. What do you make of this whole dropping in the rankings overall? I think we dropped 12 spots, according to SB Nation's little write-up there. Well, year over year, from transition class to the 2017
right.
class.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, the hardest thing for me when I look at year-over-year comparisons with recruiting sites, rather, is it's very inconsistent, the terms under which players are evaluated and ranked on these recruiting sites. One year, if you look back at our, people might want to compare, 1 year is a little bit easier, but if you're going back, let's say 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, you're looking at our signees and you're saying, okay, well, these guys from this class were rated this, and then, here we are 4 years later and look at our rankings, how they've changed or haven't changed. The biggest thing to me is that not only is it's going to be a different guy altogether. It might be a guy who ranks, some 2012 signee. He ranked him a 3-star, but he's selling cars now. He's not even in the, recruiting game anymore. So yeah. you don't know that's the biggest thing to me. And that's part of why I put more stock in offers, because either way, it's a most likely 6-figure paid FBS coach who, his job depends on it. So, that to me, that's why I put more stock into that, without going off too far on a tangent there. My point is it's kind of hard to compare year over year. And not only is it different people, but it's also, sometimes, maybe this guy was, it was 10 a.m. and he was low on work and he said, oh, let's look who's committed recently. Oh, here's a North Texas kid who doesn't have a rating yet. He just committed. I'll watch his film for, a minute while I eat this donut here and slap a rating on him. So just the terms under which these guys are rated is, to me, very consistent. And given the fact that that might be the only ranking that player gets from that site. If you're talking about an Oklahoma recruit, that recruit is going to get evaluated 10 times over by three different staff members of, you know, whatever given recruiting site it is. So it's going to be a lot more well thought out ranking. So
yeah, I think
like I said, it's kind of tough. But, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say two, I guess, examples from this recruiting cycle, the 2018 one, that kind of prove your point there. That a guy that we offered pretty early, Tommy Bush, was like unrated, and then he has a great camp and he's getting offers from everybody, and then now he's a 4-star rating, right?
Right.
You know, like mostly because, not because North Texas offered him, because Oklahoma State and Florida State and everybody else started offering him. But he was the same guy. We evaluated him, said like this guy's getting his play, and then yeah. So I see what you're saying.
I was gonna say one that I've seen kind of forgotten over time is 24/7 back before he committed to us, Willie Ivory. He mm-hmm. was at one point rated an 87, which is three ticks below a 4-star on 24/7's rating. So closer to a 4-star than a 2-star. And he got to pick up the big offers, and he drops down to a 79, which is a 2-star rating.
So he must have got slower, you know, then, I guess.
Yeah, I think he did get a little bit slower and maybe even smaller. But regardless, these rankings ain't loyal, so to speak.
Yeah, the second example, I think, like a perfect example, what you're talking about there, is not even a recruiting ranking, but was it DCTF, right, .com? They're doing their football, Texas football show, and they're kind of recapping North Texas, and then Greg Tepper was like, oh, yeah, and then, you know, North Texas coming back next year. They got T. Garee, they got Willie Ivory, Willie Robinson, so they have weapons, and, you know, they're just kind of, yeah, like, they don't really pay attention. They're not really looking closely at North Texas. And you can imagine they're doing the same thing, these big recruiting sites, for North Texas' targets. So I definitely see your point.
Relatively speaking, too, Greg Tepper is actually a guy who probably gives us more love than most people who it's their jobs to focus on more of the bigger schools. So,
yeah.
You know, for him to say that speaks volumes towards what the perception and what the attention might be like from people who don't really care.
Yeah,
but are still broadcasting their opinions on us.
It's real easy. I mean, you know, look, this is us right now. We're just a couple of dudes. We're broadcasting our opinion, so I definitely see how easy it is to do that kind of thing.
Right.
So speaking of specific players here, I kind of took a look at some of the highlights. I don't have access to all the tape that you know, the staff does. I don't have the relationships. I didn't talk to these coaches. But based on what I've seen, I like some of the, you know, I like some of the highlights. But they are highlights. So there's your disclaimer, everyone. Who on the offensive line can start pretty quickly? And as we said, I see we have size, right? Dakota Newman, 6'3", 329. I know friend of the show, Greg, he liked the Mosa kid from Euless. Anybody stand out to you? Because I know, you know, you played O-line in high school, so.
Yeah, I'll vouch for Greg on that one, actually. Yeah, Manasseh Mose, I believe, is the most likely candidate. When I was looking at the roster that has been updated for the first time yesterday since the bowl ended, we actually got Garrett Gunter back. He started the first four games and then went down in the Rice game, right, season ender. I believe he was able to qualify for a medical redshirt because he was a senior. But he was our starter at guard, so he's going to be back now. So with him back, Henson back, who took his spot. So those guys are seniors. Woodworth kind of bumped at the tackle more. So Murray got a lot of run at guard, and as did Chris Miles. So I think we're actually somewhat deep at guard right now. So given that, it's going to be pretty tough for Mose to claim a spot in there. But I think as far as being ready as a player, regardless of depth chart, he's probably the closest guy. He's big. He's never going to be tall, but that's not a huge, you know, requisite for being a guard on the Conference USA level. He's about 6'1", so it's not, you know, it's not unheard of. But he's strong. He generally moves pretty well for a guy of his size, and he's, you know, bottom line is he's a mauler, which, you know, may not fit what a lot of people conceive as an offensive lineman in this offense. I think offensive linemen who kind of fit the mold, the stereotypical mold at least, of what a lineman should look like in our offense, I would say that would be more Brian Parrish at tackle. A guy who likes to play in space, use his length, and just be able to get good reach blocks, be able to move around, play with wide splits. I think Brian Parrish is a guy who fits well, but he's also a guy I think could really benefit from a redshirt year. He's his upper body could really use some work. He didn't get quite the push that I would like to see, but he does have some of the length and athleticism that could translate to being a decent left tackle on the Conference USA level. So I think he's one to look out for. The other guys, I mean, they all have a chance, but I think Mose probably the most ready right away, just because he's already got the physicality. He looks strong enough to play on the D1 level. Brammer's another guy kind of in the mold of Parrish. He is a longer guy. And he's also, like I said, with Parrish, I think Brammer could benefit from a little more time in the weight room. Because you know, being on the outside, you are liable to get bull rushed out there. And it could happen with those guys. So, let's see, Dakota Newman, he's huge. I think he clocked in at 325, which is, that's definitely a big kid. His technique-wise, I think he's got the furthest to go. He definitely needs a lot of work with proper hand placement. I saw a lot, even in his highlights. By the way, some of these coaches need to watch these highlights before they get sent out, because there are a lot of plays on there that I would not advise to be on a highlight reel. But there were a lot of plays where his hand's on the outside, he's hooking guys, he's holding, he's tackling. And you like to see the aggression. You like to see the aggression mixed with that size. That seems to be a good recipe. But otherwise, technique is just – it needs to come a long way. So we'll see about that. And then I'm missing somebody. Oh, Jevin Pahinui, the JUCO transfer. Right. He's another guy. Like I said, he's going to get thrown in that mix at guard. So, you know, the good news is we've got some competition at guard. He's on the smaller side. I think he weighed in at 260, which for a JUCO guy, you know, you would hope that he's further along, or you would imagine at least that he's further along when it comes to body development.
Didn't he transfer from tight end or something? Like, didn't he switch positions at one point?
Oh yeah, defensive end. He came there as a defensive end. Yeah. Yeah. So he was a defensive end out of high school. So defensive end making transition to offensive guard. There's a pretty big weight discrepancy just from the general normal sizes you'll see at those positions, obviously. So, yeah, he plays pretty physical, and he likes to play in space. So I think from that standpoint, he's a good fit. And overall, like I said, I think there's a pretty wide range of offensive lineman types in this group. You've got a big, you know, huge hulking maulers like Dakota Newman and Manasseh Mose. And then you've also got Pahinui, Brammer, and Parrish, who are a little lighter on their feet. You play a lot better in space, and just generally seem like the stereotypical fit for this type of offense.
See, I can foresee a situation where we need to run the ball, and we bring in a guy like Manasseh Mose in there just to do that. I mean, because, you know, one of the things I complained about against UTSA was the fact that we couldn't get any push, and that caused some of the fumbles. Like, we were like, well, we can't run the ball, so we have to try some trickery, or we're just going to still try to run the ball, and, you know, we have Jeff Wilson fighting for yards, and then they strip the ball, and then there's a fumble. And I think we also had struggles against Army. There was a stop on the fourth down there. There was two runs back-to-back, and we basically – there was too much penetration. So I can see a scenario where we say, all right, let's get our guy that's a mauler. Maybe he's not, you know, maybe he doesn't have the technique yet, or maybe we have, you know, enough guys. I can see that happening. And you know, that's a good thing. And maybe even Bryce English mentioned that he wants there could be a possibility that he could play some fullback. So I know that's not necessarily a prototypical air raid play, but that people think of. But it is. I mean, you need a yard. Sometimes you got to line up and put your biggest and strongest in there and get a yard. So I agree. I mostly agree with everything that you said there. I like that they focused on the linemen. We needed linemen. We needed even just having bodies in there. As you said, Gunter got injured, and that caused even more shuffling. I think Jordan Murray had troubles out at tackle, and that's where they stuck Woodworth in there. From what I heard about Woodworth, they wanted to still give him even more time, that they really needed him to kind of develop more, put more weight on. But I thought he did some good things out there. So I kind of like where our offensive line is going, but I don't know. It's definitely not a strength yet, but I like the additions here. I agree. Was anybody else that stood out to you? And what about Weatherspoon? He's going to be like a blue shirt guy, right? He's not on the official signing day list.
Right, yeah. He wasn't officially announced with the class. It seems like he's going to be blue shirt guy, which if you're listening and haven't been fully versed on the term blue shirt, what it means is the player agrees to initially enter the program as a walk-on under the premise that they are promised a scholarship as soon as fall camp starts, which I'm not 100% sure, but I think that means they might have to make one rent payment. So while still all of tuition and books will be paid for, that's the fact that they're not signing. They're not being allowed to be announced on signing day. And like I said, I think they even have to make a rent payment. Because of that, you're going to see players who either don't have any other options, or in the case of Weatherspoon, his other option was Louisiana Monroe. So not the hardest sell in the world to ask him to blue shirt. So regardless, yeah, he's coming in. He's kind of in between. I think he's a little – he's not quite the hulking player that Mose is or Newman. He actually has decent film. Now that I think about it, I actually haven't seen this in a while because he committed back in the summer. He's been on board for a while now. I think he's another guy who, you know, they're really, I could see him even playing, even being developed as a center a little bit, center or guard. He's about 6'2", 285, so he kind of fits that size that you, like I said, you could see at any three of the interior offensive line positions. So, the fact that he was asked to blue shirt, it kind of makes you wonder what their perception is of the guy. I know, like I said, the catch usually is that they're a guy who doesn't have many other FBS offers, but also they could have done the same with Dakota Newman because we were his only offer. So it kind of makes you wonder why they chose, in this case, Weatherspoon to blue shirt as opposed to Dakota Newman. I mean, it could be nothing at all. We'll see. He's, like I said, he could kind of fit that mold, like you said, where, look, you want the guy to play with wide splits. You want a guy to fit this offense. You want a guy to be able to be an air raid type offensive guard, but at the same time, when the situation calls for it, you do need a guy who can stick his nose in there and maul a little bit, and this kid does. So I think that in that way he could be a good fit.
And that's what we're hoping. We're hoping for a good. I mean, you know, I always kind of use the rule of threes that was it Dan McCarney, the beat reporter, told me that Dan McCarney used. I like that. He said, you know, a third, you're really just hoping for a third of the class to be like really good, middle third to be just contributors somewhere, special teams, just regular guys, and then the rest, the bottom third, you're just kind of hoping they're there for 4 years, like they still, you know, they don't make any noise, they don't get in trouble, that kind of thing. If they're still on the roster in 3-4 years, then you're happy about the whole thing. So a couple of things about the was it Trey Siggers, Evan Johnson, they're really small, like short. I mean, you think they get any playing time, or we're just going to stash them the way we did, like with Nick Smith and Deion Griffin?
I think they're gonna have a hard time redshirting Siggers. I really do. And I've seen a few Breland Chancellor comparisons to him, which is that's always a tough kind of comparison. But they're not saying he's a Breland Chancellor quality or caliber player right now. They're saying he's Breland Chancellor-esque in the way that he plays, and I agree with that. He's about 5'8", but he's very he has that low center of gravity where he's a, you know, pound for pound, he's a strong guy. He's not a Trendon Holiday type player where if he gets hit square, he's gonna go flying, or Cole Beasley for Cowboy fans. He's not that type of player. He's a little bit strong. I don't know if you remember Breland Chancellor, some of the longer runs he had where people would hit him and wouldn't wrap up, and he would just that his momentum, just his just overall strength would just allow him to bounce off and keep going. I see that with Siggers in the way that he can take a hit and just as a glancing blow, or he could take a hit to his leg and he just spins around because he's so strong that he's able to absorb that blow. So I think in that way he's gonna have a hard time. They're gonna have a hard time redshirting him because of the impact he can make, whether it's receiving, returning kicks, or as a running back. So I think they're gonna have a hard time redshirting him. Evan Johnson, that's a tough one because he's similar. He's kind of a bit of a poor man's version. He was used in a lot of different ways out in Louisiana. He's a kid from a very, very small community in Louisiana. So, you know, he being five, I believe he's only 5'6". Being 5'6", being in a very somewhat secluded area, he wasn't getting quite the attention that Siggers got, at least early in his recruitment. So
Right.
he is an under the radar guy. He was a good find by the staff, especially if they can turn him into something. But I think if he isn't able to play, I think it'll just be because of depth. I don't think it's going to be because of size. I think a lot of people tend to default the smaller players to redshirt guys, and I don't subscribe to that just because if he's small, he's going to be small. Redshirting him and bulking him up is not going to make him too much taller than 5'6", if at all. I kind of had the same idea with Mason Fine last year. I didn't think that he was going to redshirt just because he was small. If he was going to redshirt, it was going to be because he would be our third quarterback, or they were very confident in Morris being our number one. But small quarterbacks often tend to play early just because they're good football players if they're getting scholarships. And
Yeah, I mean it makes sense
they're.
if you're small and you're overcoming that thing, it's usually because you can play a little bit. It's kind of like what Isaiah Thomas
Exactly.
from the Celtics, right? You're like, well, he's so small. It's like, well, you know, he made the NBA because he's, you know, he has some talent. I think he found a way around his height, guys.
Right.
Speaking of quarterbacks, I wanna, you know, you brought up Mason Fine. He's pretty much a starter, right? But Cade Pearson was kind of not necessarily promised. He was promised a chance to compete, and he's in there. He's knocking on Graham Harrell's door, et cetera, et cetera. He's what 6'2", 193 pounds. His what TD to interception ratio wasn't that great in high school, and I think he was what a 2-star quarterback when there were a lot of 3-star quarterbacks in the state. What do you make of that? What do you make of Cade Pearson's chances to start this thing?
Yeah, he's an interesting prospect. I also liked his interview, how he goes on to talk pretty explicitly about how he feels that he's going to be the starter and that he has that confidence. And he talks about how his parents instilled that in him, how his parents taught him to, you know, have confidence and be, you know, be able to expect these things out of yourself. And then right after that, he said, and they also taught me to be humble too. He had the nice, he covered all grounds in a matter of about 5 seconds. So I was pretty impressed by that. But as a prospect, he definitely seems to be a fit guy. And I think we've seen that a lot so far. We're going to continue to see it. Guys who may not be the most highly recruited, but the coaches just really like. The coaches are, you know, really sold that they're going to fit their scheme, fit their program, and fit the system. So he doesn't have the strongest arm. I think that's part of why he wasn't super highly recruited. But I think he's the kind of guy who he can be a consistent passer. He can be a guy who gets hot and is you know, going through his progressions, and he's finding all guys all over. He may not be the deadliest guy on outside throws, but I think he's definitely a guy who can really do damage over the middle of the field as a passer. He's got good touch, which is helpful, especially for guys who don't have the strongest arms.
Yeah.
So I think he's got traits that can translate to this offense, and he's also got decent legs. He's not going to be a 500 yard rusher or anything like that for any seasons he's here, I don't believe, but he's going to be a guy who can extend the play or get you 5 or 6 yards here and there. Maybe a la Derek Thompson, although probably a different running style. I think he's a good fit, and I think they're gonna. It's a lot of it's gonna fall on how he develops here, how the coaches develop him, and how far he comes along. And we're gonna see that with Fine as well, heading into his second year. But ultimately, it's just gonna see who can really pick up this offense and use its concepts and schemes to their advantage.
Yeah, I think the best runner is probably Isidore if his knees is fine, and then you go Mason Fine.
Yeah, that's
because
his best attribute.
Yeah. And you got Mason Fine. I mean, he showed what he can do. I like Mason Fine. I felt like his worst games were because he was making freshman mistakes. He was kind of staring down a guy, or, he had like tunnel vision. He's like, I'm going to make a play and fire it downfield, and when he should have made a simpler play. I think that kind of stuff will go away a little bit. I mean, it depends. Maybe he's just a gunner. But I feel like those kinds of things will improve as he gets older and matures in the system. Was it Graham Harrell called Cade Pearson's arm? He said he had a live arm. I don't know what that means exactly. That sounds like it means like he can chuck the ball around, but live arm. He has a live arm. I don't know. Wait, do you have you want to handicap the QB position depth chart for spring ball, I guess, at the very least?
Yeah. As far as Isidore Devlin, yeah. I'm not sure if he's going to be available for spring ball this year. He had an ACL injury. Mm-hmm. He is coming in as a preferred walk-on, but he's generated a lot of buzz just because he is a 6'4" dual threat quarterback who had pretty decent JUCO stats. So we're going to see what he can do. Throwing wise, I really am not a huge fan of his film. He's had a lot of those little tweets, motivational talking with him making a good throw, on Apogee, or those kind of little tweets showing off his arm. He's got the arm strength.
Yeah,
I worry about his delivery and his consistency to be accurate with the way he throws.
Those things go hand in hand. Yeah, like a good delivery generally means you have good accuracy. There are exceptions, but yeah.
Right. I mean, it's hard to project the ball where you want to go whenever you have when your delivery is not consistent or it's consistently bad. But he's actually, like I said, he's had these little videos that he's released here and there that people have been getting excited about. But in the videos, he's looked like he's kind of tightened up his release. Like it looks a little better. It looks a little more like a Division I quarterback release should look like, in my opinion. And it's a good sight to see. But also, it's kind of hard to when people are pass rushing and when you've got a linebacker and you're looking down the barrel of a blitz, it's kind of hard to, if you've changed up your motion, it's hard to not revert back to whatever your prior motion was, whatever you've been so accustomed to throwing like. So that's something that I'm really going to look at closely is how he throws, his release. This is a 6'4", 200 and, he's a big kid, 215 pounds or so, and runs very well and put up some big JUCO stats. So given all these things, the fact that he's walking on, that tells you a little bit about what some of his flaws might be. So like I said, that's what I'm going to be really focusing on with him. If he can get his accuracy down with his arm strength and running ability, that opens the offense. That opens up the playbook huge. So That'll be interesting to see if Pearson is somehow able to grab the starting role. It's probably going to be a less expansive playbook than Isidore. And then Fine is probably somewhere in the middle, just because he doesn't have a super strong arm, but for a little guy, he can let the ball fly a little bit. But he's also played a year in the offense, and then he is pretty athletic. He's had how long was that run at UTSA?
80 yards.
80 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's shown the ability to definitely make plays with his feet. So I think looking at it from that standpoint, it's hard not to believe that Fine's going to be the starter on day one, just because he's done it. And while the candidates have promise in different aspects, none stand out as guys who just immediately command huddle one looks. And I think they will be probably shuffled in and out here and there. But overall, I think it's, if I had to guess, I would say week one. Man, I'm pretty sold on Fine being the number one guy. But after that, it's going to come a lot on Isidore, if he's able to show consistent accuracy, and then for him to recover from the surgery, which it seems like he has. So, that'll be an interesting one. I think if I had to guess, I would say if they didn't want to redshirt Pearson, he'd be the number two, but that might be tempting enough to have let Isidore be the number two. So I think if there was one season left of Mean Green football and there were no worrying about 2018, I think I'd give the nod to Pearson right now as the number two guy. Given the fact that Isidore has already used his red shirt and Pearson hasn't, I think that it could be close enough where that they made that be the deciding factor.
Yeah, I mean, and I'd like to redshirt somebody. You kind of want a guy for the future. Longer term. I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that they're bringing in guys every year. This is good. It's good competition. Keeps everybody sharp, and it prevents against injuries. If we think any one of these guys, I think they're all very, like you said, very similar. We probably could go into week one with any one of them and feel okay, and kind of worried about some aspect of the game. And I think that's going to be the case. Ideally, you wanted like three guys that could start, right? But starting like be all conference, I think, like what is it, Louisiana Tech kind of had that situation. Their guy, he lost that because he got injured or whatever. All right, so they're throwing to guys, Turner Smiley, right? You got Rico Bussey if he's feeling good, and he shows out like he did in the bowl game. And some of these new guys, Jalen Guyton is obviously the cream of the crop here, but you already mentioned Jalen Darden, Greg White, and maybe, I don't know if Trey Siggers is going to play receiver or he's going to play running back. The running back situation kind of needs more depth. I know we have, Tucker and we have Weish, but they didn't really play that much and they didn't really perform that well. It was pretty much a two-man gig there, Jeffrey Wilson and Willie Ivory. And even then, when Jeffrey Wilson got injured, we still stuck him in there as soon as he kind of recovered from his surgery. So I don't know. I feel like the running back position kind of needs more dudes. I don't know, but what do you make of that, the wide receiver position? How do you make of the whole depth chart? Where do these guys fit in?
One of the interesting things with Siggers is that if they can teach him multiple positions, which I haven't seen them do that with anybody.
Yeah, generally they you're, it's one guy, one position. Like even inside and outside,
right.
They don't really like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So if this were a different coaching staff running the same offense, if they were a little more adept at getting guys reps in multiple positions, I think we could see Siggers playing inside just because he has the size. While short, he can take those kind of over the middle blows every once in a while that can happen to slot guys. And also he can catch the ball as well. But yeah, given the fact that I think they're just going to stick him at one position and ride him there, I think he's going to be running back. And I don't think they're going to do too much experimenting outside of that. And that's just my opinion. But
it's interesting that he's listed as a wide receiver on like it was 24/7 at least. But I mostly agree with what you're saying. But yeah, I'm just kind of wondering where they see him.
He's definitely an athlete prospect, and he actually had really solid defensive film as well, to kind of be a shorter safety. But yeah, I think he's like I said, I think he's going to be a running back, and that's where he's going to stick, and that's where he's going to get all his reps, get all those meetings, the running backs, and they're not going to think twice about it. But one of the interesting things,
Bob Sanders was the short safety, right? I know, like, yeah, you're Colts fans, right?
No, I'm a Titans fan.
Titans fan, yeah.
So, yes, by proxy, yes, I do see a lot of Bob Sanders.
Yeah.
And a lot of Bob Sanders destroying my team.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. I can. The Titans are trending up a little bit, so I can have painful flashbacks every now and then of the not so fun years. But I think one of the things that I'm looking at with the receiver position is we've got a lot of guys who are outside guys. I think Wilson, Rutherford, Smiley, Bussey. I'm interested to see who's playing inside this year. Wilson's a guy who, like you said before, he's played primarily outside, and the coaches don't seem to like to tinker with that too much. But I think given our depth chart, I think they could use him inside more. But you know, I don't know if that change is going to happen. It's going to happen now before spring ball. So I'm interested to see how they stack up. And you know a lot more about the ins and outs of the air raid and you know, who's more fit for X, who's more fit for Y. But at the same time, I'm interested to see how it all shakes out, because I think our top guys right now seem to fit more on the outside. And I'm not sure. Kenny Byers, while he didn't have the most impressive stats, I think he was a guy who there's a reason they moved him to receiver. He fit in that offense in a way that I don't think they had too many other guys to play inside the way they wanted, and there's a reason why he was moved there after being a honorable mention all-conference cornerback in his previous college football playing life.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of him as a corner. I think one of the reasons they didn't like him at corner maybe was because he was getting beat deep too much. But to answer your question about like who fits where, I agree with what you're saying. I'm wondering. I've been waiting for a guy there, like. There's like a line of thinking and kind of air raid, you know, strategy, and there's different branches, right? You know, like Holgorsen he'll say something different than Mike Leach, but generally, like, the origins of it was like a two back system, and the Y receiver was a tight end. It was like either flex or on the line. So still, there's a lot of routes where he's like a bigger guy, and you look at like Thaddeus Thompson. He was kind of big and tall, and he would play inside there. That's kind of generally, or like, was it Wilson?
Kelvin Smith,
that's what I'm thinking of. Something like that. And you kind of look at some of the offers that we've made to a couple guys that kind of fit that mold. I think, was it the 2019 tight end that we're probably not going to get? Was it Austin Stonger or something like that? He's like 6'6", big kid.
Yeah, I think he's from Plano.
Yeah. So you're looking at somebody like that. You can have one of those guys playing inside, somebody that can block, big body, Thaddeus Thompson, basically. And then the other one is, like you said, a shifty guy that can find space, who's quick. And that was the thing about Kenny Byers, is he was quick, and he could find the play. I think playing defense kind of helped him play offense. I also think that sometimes our quarterbacks didn't look at him. There was a couple times he was wide open, and we just completely ignore him. And I think that was more the quarterbacks than it was him. I liked a lot of what he did at that position. And I agree. I don't know if there's a guy that fits that mold so easily. And it's cliche to say, right? Like, you know, Wes Walker type. But Wes Walker, you know, made a living as the H or the A, whatever you want to call it. And so did Danny Amendola, those kinds of guys, right?
Britton, I think. Edward Britton.
Yeah, like those kinds of guys that are shifty, find space, that are quick, you know, catch the ball, make a move, turn up field, and get yards. That's basically it. I agree. I keep looking at one of these short, shifty guys, and I'm wondering if they're going to be that guy, or they're going to be that dude. And you're right, I don't really see that. We'll see. I think maybe Jalen Guyton could probably play something like that. But I think they're probably going to put him outside because they like his speed. But I don't know. Darden, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, Darden could easily. I think he's, in that way, I think he's got a really good shot to play early because of that situation. Of all the guys that we've signed, he probably does have one of the better shots for that reason.
Yeah, I think one of the things holding him back is that position has like a lot of option routes, and so you either have to have a great feel for getting open, you know, or you need the experience. So I'm not sure. I don't know. Okay, so just moving on to the defensive side of the ball. Wait, before, what do you make of Brad Davis leaving? How big of an impact do you think that's going to make?
He wasn't working with too much last year. He really did what he could piecing together an offensive line out of that group. And I've said it before, but I think offensive line, while quarterback will get the most headlines, I think if there's another position where McCarney was absolutely horrid at recruiting, it was offensive line. And so there wasn't too much, there weren't really upperclassmen, too many at least, that were left inherited by Davis when he got here. Sam Rice was, but he was also a transfer. Trey Keenan was. He was also a transfer who hadn't played up till last year. And Garrett Gunter was a former walk-on JUCO player who hadn't played really on the Division I level. So that's what he was working with as far as upperclassmen. And then underclassmen, they were guys who hadn't really played. Sands, Jordan Murray, and Chris Miles, who maybe aren't the best fit for this offense, but guys who were decent prospects and have shown ability to play at the level, maybe not quite the fit for this offense. Guys that he had to work with all this, and he came out with a pretty decent prospect or pretty decent group. They definitely ran the ball well at times. They were able to get some push up front, and at times they weren't. And at times they got the quarterback hit a lot. Yeah. And at times Mason Fine ran himself into situations. So yeah. it was a tough situation. So given all that, it was nice where we were able to get a lot of these guys back. So, but the concerning thing to me is we don't really have. I don't know who the quote-unquote captain of the offensive line would be. I know last year it'd probably be Sam Rice. Back in the McCarney years, Y-Barbo seemed to hold that down pretty well. I don't know that we really have a standout guy who you say, oh, he's going to be on the preseason all-conference list, or he's going to be on the short list to be, to be a stud player and, you know, be an all-conference guy. The guys who we have back have shuffled around a lot and haven't really necessarily found a foothold in the starting lineup or in one spot. So I think that's the biggest thing is Brad Davis was able to be a minimalist in that way and make things work. And whoever the next guy is, I think that's going to be his biggest task is finding guys to get set now in the second year. While it'll be their first year under that offensive line coach, it'll be their second year in this offense. And yeah. At some point they need consistent guys. They need solidified figures on that line to the point where you know you're going to get out of certain guys. You know you're going to be able to go to battle with certain guys and be able to lean on them throughout courses of the game. And I think it's hard to really pinpoint who those guys might be. The good news is pretty much all of our best linemen have multiple years of eligibility left. Murray, while not great, has shown flashes. Woodworth is only a redshirt sophomore, so they've got a chance. But I think, like I said, that's going to be the big thing is getting guys in place now that they've had a year to tinker with them. And that's the unfortunate part about Davis. He's had that time to tinker with them, but that experience is gone. And so the new coach has to be able to take those experiences in those experiments that Davis had last year and parlay that into a lot more solidified unit this year.
Yeah, I guess what I'm looking for is, it's from the head coach down, right? Like, and I think this is the case. I'm hoping it's the case, especially again since the staff and these guys coached under Mike Leach, and Mike Leach was an offensive line coach once upon a time, And I think recently he says the first thing he does after practice is, and the first film that he looks at is the offensive line practice. And so I'm hoping, you know, that they take the line seriously. And I think they do. And I know at Washington State, because, you know, I like following Mike Leach around his career. They had a terrible offensive line first, and then they improved. And they were a strength this last year. It takes time. And, you know, this is now it's year two of this rebuilding process. And as you said, there was not a whole lot to work with. So I'm kind of hoping whoever the guy they get in, and I'm expecting it'll be another solid coach. I think one thing that Seth Luttrell has managed to do is get some quality coaches here. And I know some people were like, Graham Harrell, he's only been an assistant, whatever. But I think he, you know, he's done some good things here. So I think that Seth Luttrell's hired some good coaches and he has some good contacts. He's been around at various different places. So I'm pretty confident in whoever he's going to pick that they'll be pretty decent at the very least. And so they'll be able to do some of those things that you mentioned there. I know there is some like speculation. Brett Vito came out today saying there's another guy who might move. Meaning, I think somebody on the defensive side, and I hear some rumblings that maybe the co-defensive coordinator situation wasn't quite as cheery as it was made out to be on, like, Beyond the Green. And, you know, that's fine and whatever. So I think all my next couple questions here will kind of relate to that. It depends on who we keep and who we bring in. But what do you make of some of the defensive prospects? Tony Krasniqi, he seemed like he had good size. Deion Noville, I didn't really look too much at his stuff. I think some people were liking what Chris Thornton has done. Cameron Johnson, he got some public. They really like him. Apparently, he has a lot of speed, very fast. I kind of like Tyreek Davis as safety, and then Michael Sanders. I don't really know too much about him. Any thoughts on any of those guys?
Yeah, I think my guy to look out for, and this is he's a long term guy, is Deion Noville. He's a guy who was apparently down between us and Abilene Christian. He's from Abilene, or at least was for high school. I think he was from Florida originally, somewhere else. But either way, I like his film as a defensive lineman. I think he's going to take time to develop. I think he's going to weigh a lot more than he does now by the time he's actually on the field. But he has long arms. He's got a chance to be a really disruptive defensive lineman, and that's what I got from his film, is that he can really get penetration pretty well given his abilities. And I think it's gonna, from what I saw in his highlights, I think it's gonna translate well for the next level. I think over time. So I don't think he's going to be a guy we're going to see too much this year. Thornton is another bit of a project, and it seems to me like they're kind of stockpiling these 3-4, these Jack linebacker type hybrid defensive end linebacker guys, pass rushers. They've got Wheeler, who they really made a priority to get last year, and then we saw how big an impact he had on the defense last year immediately. They've got Joseph Azogu from last year, who he redshirted. He was actually picked up by the McCarney staff, but he's one of the guys who kind of fits pretty well, given that he's that type of player. Now Thornton. So, yeah, like I said, I think they are trending towards that, having one of those guys on hand at all times, having a guy who can really get after get after the passer. And, Ladarius Hamilton as well. Sorry, I almost forgot about him. Yeah, he's
Hambone.
Yeah. He's played in that position as well. So they've got some options there, and I think they really value that position as most three down linemen defenses often do. Krasniqi, he's a bit of a tweener for me. Defensive tackle, defensive end, not doesn't have prototypical defensive tackle size. Doesn't particularly have defensive end type athletic ability or range, height, length, all that.
Yeah.
But he's somewhere in between. I think they're going to find a fit for him. He plays hard. He had a lot of production at the high school level for a pretty good program in Sachse. I think he's going to fit somewhere. Three tech, if they could get him in there, beef him up a little bit. He definitely has a very disruptive film. He's while I said he's not, the rangiest guy, I think he does have decent enough athleticism to, to get into the backfield. I think who else? Yeah, Tyreek Davis, he's definitely he's one of the headliners of this class for a reason. I think he's gonna fit in that fifth defensive back role, making a lot of tackles, making a lot of plays in the box, being able to be physical up there, and also being able to cover guys. So, so I think that'll be interesting to see Davis. I wouldn't question, or I wouldn't be too shocked to see him playing early. Cameron Johnson, he's another guy who we lost. Chad Davis this year. Last year, we're going to lose. We got Eric Jenkins as a senior this year. So Cameron Johnson's definitely going to have a chance to step in pretty early in his career and have an impact.
And also think
And then
we lost a
still
guy
got Nate
recently,
Brewer.
right? Darius Turner or something, right? Yeah, I think he's
Yeah, he was a JUCO guy who, in Latrell's first class, and he was a depth guy. He wasn't going to be starting anytime soon, but that'll definitely help make the path a little bit quicker for Johnson. So I think he's in a good spot there. Sanders was a guy who committed back in, I want to say October, November during the season. I haven't watched this film in a while, but he's going to play safety for us. Sorry, I'm not going to give ill advice on this film that I haven't seen in a while. But let's see, who am I missing here?
it's most of them. What Cody Fulp, 6'2", 225 out of China Spring. I didn't get a chance to look
Yeah,
too much
well,
at him.
he's a big guy for a linebacker. Especially during the McCarney years and even last year, we've been a lot of the linebackers we've been getting have been not the biggest guys. Think about the Cedric Ellis, Calvin Miner, Brandon Garner type signings that we've had over the years. Fulp is he's a thumper in the middle, and he's a guy who, again, not the best offer list. Just us and Louisiana Monroe, and I can see why at times, but also. He looks like a division one linebacker. I think I think he's gonna be able to find a spot. It's gonna be up to him, up to how well he plays in space, especially in Conference USA. At linebacker, you can't have a stiff in the middle there. Teams will expose you pretty quickly. So that'll be the thing to watch with him. If he can progress in that area, he could be a pretty good player for us. Especially in the running game, he gets off blocks pretty well, and he's big. The athletic ability and playing space is going to be probably what determines how good a player he is for us.
Yeah, I think one thing that we were missing in the last 2 years was like horizontal speed, lateral speed from our linebacking core. There was a couple times you could just see that teams were running around the end on us on purpose because they knew we couldn't really do too much about it. And we were basically relying on Keyshawn McClain to cover all the ground. And I mean, just you think a little bit about the Army. I know Army's that's kind of their whole scheme, but they were able to get the edge on us. And a couple times just because our linebackers couldn't get, they couldn't set the edge there. So you'd like to see a lot of speed. I know that was like a priority. Definitely in this 3-3-5, you want speed. You want versatility is mostly what you want. But part of that is speed at all positions. I know that's a very generic statement, right? On defense, you'd like some athletes. I think that's most of the class there. And you kind of covered a little bit about it in like your primer for it. Some of the other guys, the blue shirt guys. And those you can find those on Mean Green Nation. I think what I want to do in like the last couple minutes that we have left in this episode, is to talk a little bit about the recruiting for next year because it's already started. I think somebody posted we had like 28, 29 offers. I think 24/7 has like 29 offers, but there's a couple guys that are not like on that list that have tweeted like, "Oh my God, I got an offer! My first offer! So excited!" Does anybody stand out for you? I mean, I think right now, Tommy Bush, wide receiver, out of Clemens. He's basically, I mentioned him earlier, he's a four-star now. he's probably a reach. I mean, we're basically saying, yeah, we're going to out-recruit Florida State and Texas Tech and Washington State. I don't really see that happening, but is anybody else that kind of stands out to you or that you think?
I've just seen the offers here and there, people retweeting it, but I haven't dug in the film yet. It's hard. I remember back when I first really got active, kind of trying to cover it more for us, for UNT Mean Green Recruiting.
Yeah.
When I started, I was full speed, 365, posting offers like this and seeing, looking at the early guys it's extremely rare. The guys who are getting offers early are typically not the guys you're going to see sign with us. But that's not to say it doesn't happen. Nate Brooks was a guy who we offered him the summer in between his sophomore and junior year. So there are guys who we can be in on early and end up signing. So I think the biggest thing for me early in the recruiting process is trying to be that first offer a lot of times with the guys who they're Division I athletes. Like you said with Tommy Bush, that's a good example where if you can be his first offer, maybe he doesn't sign with you, but, that resonates with him. Things don't work out at school one, and he says, I want to come back to Texas, or I want to I want to play more. And he remembers that, the team offered him first. That can happen. And I think that's one of the things that I like to see early in the process is getting in on these guys who, look, even if you don't sign them, at least you're making an impression with them. And I know that sucks in a way that, we can be the fallback. That's what we get early recruiting. That's not the only thing, but I think it's something that we would be foolish to not try to take advantage of, given our predicament. Going forward with this class, it's the thing that just stands out to me. Like I said earlier with the whole winning recruiting battles deal, it's, before we can start out-recruiting P5 schools, we've got to start out-recruiting Texas State and UTSA and, even SMU. I mean, we've got to get more kids who other people want. And it's going to start there first, and it's got to happen there. And then UTSA, you look at them, and they're getting – they've already got a couple of 2018 commits, I think.
They have, three or four of them, I think, now.
Yeah. I mean, they're getting guys, and who knows if those guys will stick or not. But the point is they're getting kids to buy what they're selling. And if you can get kids to buy what you sell, then they can overlook the fact that they've got more prestigious offers. Because if they're really sold on you, that's what's going to really stand out to them when they think about you. And that's going to give you a shot. And, that's ultimately what's happening down there at UTSA. People are buying into Frank Wilson, wholeheartedly. We've got to get, Seth Luttrell and crew, they've got to get people to start buying into their program, buying into their product. Once that happens, it's going to start off with, winning some of these recruiting battles we've been losing. And then it's going to eventually, hopefully, become, getting a guy who has, a Kansas offer or a, T. Gorey had a Colorado offer before they got good. Those kind of offers where you can get a kid from Texas to choose you. You can get a kid from Dallas, Fort Worth to choose UNT over, Boston College or, some kind of lower tier P5 school, which, hey, if you can get those guys, look at Western Michigan's roster this past year. They had all kinds of guys on that roster who had Illinois offers and, trying to think of other maybe even in Nebraska here. They had a lot of guys who they were getting Big Ten offers. They were getting, they were even getting some like Big 12, Iowa State. These kind of they had guys. Their roster was and still is littered with guys who chose them over P5 schools. Even about the best P5 schools, they chose them over P5 schools. And if we could get a team filled with guys who chose us over the Kansas and Iowa States of the world, we would be loaded on the Conference USA level. I think Western Kentucky has kind of assembled that. I think it's gonna something's got to change. I don't know exactly what it is, but we've got to do a better job of that. And also holding out spots for guys like Jalen Darden at the end. Darden had a Virginia Tech offer at one point. So I think that's going to be the key for this class is to finally emerge and figure out what hasn't been working and change that and start getting kids to really for UNC to really stand out in their college choices. And I just think the coaches need to continue to monitor. It seems like that's one of the things they've done well is they've monitored players all throughout the class so that hey, when signing day comes close, they know who's still available. They've had contact with guys. I think Greg White, Tashard Choice was his contact through our Cowboys partnership. Hey, Tashard Choice, they started talking, during the season months ago. So that's these type of monitoring throughout the entire recruiting process that I think can reap benefits for us later down the line.
There are multiple aspects to recruiting, right? There's that identifying them early. There's talking to them, building a relationship throughout the thing. Then there's, like you said, there's the quick on your feet. Like we lost Trayvon Bradley and we got Greg White, right? That's you kind of need that. You don't want to be stuck at the altar. I'm like, well, now we got a ship and we ain't got nobody. We haven't looked at him. We haven't done the work or we don't fully know this. But you got to always, right, always be recruiting, always be recruiting. And I think, like the getting like guys like Eric Jenkins, right before the season starts, he comes in, and gets two pick sixes, right? I
And
think,
get pick sixes, yeah.
yeah, like those things when we're talking about recruiting and all this other stuff, like those count. That's getting guys. It's getting talent, identifying talent, and then the second part of it is developing it. And I think like so far, the guys that they've identified, I've liked a lot of those guys. I think Mason Fine, is a recruit. He did well. Eric Jenkins. There's a couple guys here and there that you can point to and say, well, that was pretty good, right? Josh Wheeler. And then, we're going to see a little bit more of the development as we move along. Because it was easy to say, well, look at Dan McCartney. He's getting some quarterbacks in. He's got Josh Greer. He got, this guy, that guy. Nobody panned out. It didn't work, right? Ultimately, he couldn't develop them or he was picking the wrong guys and threw his hands up in the air. So we don't know. And I think, I guess, to kind of talk everybody down from the ledge, there's like a whole segment every week, every time I do a podcast, like, here's why you shouldn't really worry too much about UTSA is that there's a lot of LSU has a lot of talent every year, all the time. And they've done a lot of underperforming a lot, right? Leonard Fournette was one of the best college football running backs we've ever seen. And, he ended up getting his coach fired because, the team didn't work. There's a lot of talent, ton of talent, right? So that doesn't always translate. What can you do with said talent? There's a lot of teams that got beat that were really talented and got beat by other schools that are not so much talented. But that's not to say, again, that talent doesn't matter. It does matter. And at the most important positions, as you mentioned, offensive line, quarterback. Another thing about Mike Leach again, I was reading something today where they were saying, there was like a concern about their wide receiver position, like who's gonna be the next Gabe Marks or whatever, and they were looking at his classes over time, and the most productive guys were the 4-star wide receivers, 4-3 and 2-star wide receivers, and like the walk-ons, some of the transfers, they didn't really work out. I mean, that makes sense. If you said that to the generic guy off the street, like here's a 5-star recruit and he did well, and here's a walk-on, he didn't do so well, you'd be like, yeah, well, duh, makes sense. So, yeah, talent matters, but it's National Signing Day and the recruiting rankings and all that, maybe not so much. It's an indicator, So anyway, that's my word, my talk you down. And the other thing, some of UTSA's like their signing class or their 24 composite ratings includes, like, for example, Javaris Stewart, who was
Right.
famously arrested. And, is a question mark, a gigantic question mark. And that bumped him up like 5 points or 6 points or something like that. So,
A question mark to graduate high school.
yeah. So, like, I mean, when you look at it, you're like, oh, these guys are great. Look at that, like, former 4-star recruit there. You're like, yeah, but there's more to it. And, I mean, it's fine to take a question mark guy, like a guy with some questionable, like, yeah, he robbed somebody, but you know, we can rehab him here. But there's a certain turning point there where, like, you don't want to poison your program. Like, I'm all for a redemption story, but you can't have a prison squad out there. You know what I mean? It doesn't really work that way. I don't know. Do you have any words of wisdom about recruiting in this 2018 season?
And I think just looking at the general fan base, everybody's really excited about Luttrell. Year one was comparatively very awesome to the prior year. So I think he's earned a lot of followers. He's earned a lot of fans. I have been pretty critical of him in his recruiting ability. But one thing I will give him credit for is that when I look at the players that he signed who maybe aren't the most recruited guys in the world, and I compare that to what McCarney was signing, the biggest difference that I see in these, you know, lowly recruited, lowly rated guys, these guys who chose us over nobody or chose us over
Walmart,
you know, New Mexico State. Yeah. These kind of guys that Luttrell's been getting, the difference is from them from the McCarney guys is of the similar recruitment is these guys are good football players. And I know that sounds stupid, whatever, but you get Mason Fine is a Division I quarterback because he's a good football player. Some of the quarterbacks you mentioned earlier were Division I quarterbacks because they looked like Division I quarterbacks. Yeah. And if you get a 6'4 quarterback coming to North Texas, and you didn't recruit him and he didn't choose you over anybody noteworthy, there's a good chance nobody offered him for a reason. In 6'4 quarterbacks are generally, if they're good, they're going to get picked up by P5 programs. Same with offensive linemen. We signed some big offensive linemen in the McCarney years who didn't play a meaningful snap for us. Likewise, you know, we just signed Manasseh Mose. He is 6'1 and about 290. So he's not very tall. That's why he's not recruited. It's not because he can't play football. So that's, and then we also had some receivers. Look back to the early years. Chaz Sampson was a 6'4 guy who McCarney brought in early on, and he caught zero career passes. Rod Lancaster, zero career catches. So that's the biggest difference to me is I think at least the guys we're getting are being overlooked because they're small, not because they can't play. And you know, we can find a spot for a guy who might be a little bit undersized but can play. And that's what I'm most interested in looking into is how he does, you know, fit everybody in the scheme. And if they can play, I think they're going to be able to help us win games, at least on the Conference USA level. You know, maybe we're not going to be beating Oklahoma or Florida State the way Houston did. Maybe we're not going to have that quite a type of talent. But, you know, we can win 7, 8, 9 games. Compete for division championships, you know, with a lot of help from these kind of guys that we've really benefited from over the years, you know, like Mason Ybarbo.
Excellent points. And, you know, in much in the same way that we have to build, like you said, we have to beat Conference USA in recruiting, and then we can look around and start beating the Group of Five, and then we can start beating, you know, the lower tier P5 teams and on and so forth until we win a national title 7 years in a row, right? Before we do that, like the same thing, like we don't need to beat Houston in a game. We don't really need to like worry about who do we play next year? Like Florida. We just played Florida.
Iowa.
Yeah, Iowa, that's what it is. We don't need to beat them, you know, that's kind of like a wow, look, North Texas actually was in that game. That's pretty good. You know, whatever. The Western Kentucky is who we need to beat. We need to not get ran off the field by them or by Middle Tennessee or by Louisiana Tech. Those are the teams that we got to worry about first. And the good news is that Conference USA is like, you know, the difference between the very top and the very bottom is not that great. You know, UTEP is beatable. UTSA, for all the hype, you know, we lost to them because our quarterback was a freshman. You know, like Rice won a conference championship in 2013 and they were the worst team in the conference this year. Marshall had the number one recruiting class the last 2 years in the conference, and we beat them at home. And we would have beat them, you know, in Huntington if we had a quarterback the year before. So this conference is winnable. That's one of the good things where you're like, man, Conference USA sucks. Like, yeah, that's why you can go from one win to 5 wins while also not having the greatest offense ever. You know, like, that. It's eminently possible. And that's what I'm excited about. We can do it. We don't really need, as you said, we don't need like 4 or 5-star recruits to win this conference. We just need some football players, guys that are undersized, enough 2-star guys that could play. And we can make some noise in Conference USA, and then we can worry about, making some noise on 24/7 as composite ratings later on. So that's good. I think that does it for our show. Thanks, Billy, for jumping on. I really appreciate it. I know we had some scheduling hurdles to get around. Let's do it more regularly. We'll probably check in with you. You write the what is your official title? Recruiting moderator guy at GoMainGreen.com?
Yeah, that sounds pretty accurate. I've taken a bit of a step back with not being in college anymore and having a full time job and
it's funny how that works.
Having to work, it's not all it's cracked up to be. But I'm doing a little more moderating, a little bit less posting of every single offer. But generally that's what I do.
Cool. So and you're on Twitter. You went and got all official Twitter title. Is it?
Yeah. Billy Sierra 16. Yeah. Found out how to change the high school Twitter handle that I didn't realize you had to get on the desktop to do that.
Yeah, it's
I stick to my phone typically.
Yeah, that's fine. I still use like one of my emails that I use for like junk mail now is still my high school email that involves being an MVP and my old high school number. So good times, guys.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so you can find Billy there. You can find Mean Green Nation. I mean, obviously, again, it's weird to give like this stuff out here because if you're listening to the podcast, presumably you were able to find the site or the show or the podcast, and you can find lots of links there. But MeanGreenNation.com, Mean Green Nation on Twitter. If you have some super hot sports opinions, you can email me. You can tweet at me. Let me know. Let me know what you think. Ladies and gentlemen, we are done. Go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.